Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and well, here we go. I got a bit of a cough, folks, so please excuse me. Hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Media Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. Spring has sprung. Everything's blooming here, all the fruit trees, and the oak is just coming out. I'm looking out into my garden and the woods below me, and it looks gorgeous right now, so beautiful part of the year in Texas. It's probably still a little chilly up where my guest is from, but today is part two in our series, Interviewing Unity Ministers. And I've done this a couple of times before, interviewed some fascinating folks and all their varying traditions that they've been influenced by. And so I thought I'd do it again. We're discovering their own particular pathway and their current interests and vision for unity. So today I welcome John Considine. Prior to becoming a Unity minister, John was a politician and attorney, and he served in the Florida House of Representatives for 4 years in the 1970s. So we thank him for his service. He's also served as a Unity minister since 1998, and currently, I believe, is the senior minister of the Spiritual Life Center in Detroit. He's also an actor. He's done many things. So it's a pleasure to welcome John Considine to today's show. Welcome, John.
Hi, Paul John. Hello. So it's spring has sprung in Texas, has it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's gorgeous here right now.
Well, I can let you know that we're waiting on snowfall here in Detroit.
Yeah, I thought things were going to be a little slower up that way. Yeah, you know, it rolls north, doesn't it? Spring rolls north, so.
Yeah.
Well, be safe.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. I'd just let you know Spiritual Life Center is no longer in existence, and I'm not active in a church or center right now. But I'm still in ministry.
So you're a free-floating minister right now.
I am free-floating, yes. Speaking churches and doing workshops and yeah.
Yeah, because I just retired from my church community after 30 years, and so I'm learning what it's like to be a minister, you know, at large, so to speak. So let's ask the first question. What tradition, if any, did you grow up in, John?
I grew up in a very strict Roman Catholic tradition. Yeah, I was raised a Roman Catholic, huh? Yeah.
And did that resonate with you, that my last guest last week, Ariana Platten, you know, she's the minister Colorado Springs. She also was brought up in the Roman Catholic tradition. She got something out of it, but she also found there were many aspects of the belief system that didn't resonate with her. What about for you?
Oh, I did not. It was not for me. I want to say something more drastic than that. It was very difficult for me as a child. I took it all very, very, very literally and very seriously. And I think I was raised by nuns and priests, mostly from from Ireland who took it very seriously and literally, and it was harsh. It was a very harsh way of being brought up. My grandmother was a convert and to the Catholic Church. And sometimes, you know, converts can be worse than somebody born into a religion.
Of course, yes.
God bless Granny Considine. She was, and it was hard as a child, and I couldn't wait to escape. I took it all very seriously, the mortal sins and venial sins, and how many years will I spend in purgatory for what I just did? And I was happy to find my way out of that religion. And I want to point this out, that, you know, I have a couple of children who went through Catholic Church when they were young, and they did not have that experience. And so I don't want to criticize Catholicism. Many people have a different experience of it than I did.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, interesting thing is, you know, I love a lot of the Catholic mystics, you know, whether it be Meister Eckhart or St. John of the Cross, you know, St. Teresa, or modern-day people like Thomas Merton or Richard Rohr. So it's the Catholic Church is quite broad in that sense. It includes a lot, doesn't it? Even though some of its strictures and dogmas might be not what we'd like, it has enough breadth and depth to it to still welcome people. Of course, often they're sort of shunted off into, you know, monasteries in the middle of nowhere because they're too radical for the mainstream, but they're still allowed to do their thing, you know, and that you got to commend the Catholic Church for that, even if you disagree with some of its tenets. Of course, I think we have a wonderful Pope right now. He's done a few strange moves lately, but in general, he's been a breath of fresh air, I think.
What strange moves are you noticing?
Well, some of the his responses to abuse and the protecting of bishops and archbishops, I think in Chile and whatever, was not really what we expected from him, but I'm not going to hold that against him. But you know, mm-hmm. Nobody can be perfect, right?
I agree. Yes, agreed. Even within the Catholic Church, even in my grade school now, you see, I had the order the nuns of Saint Joseph in my grade school, and then in high school it was the Dominican nuns, and the difference was night and day. The Dominicans were a breath of fresh air; they were a happy group, and it comes from culture that they came through. And the Saint Joseph nuns were not a happy bunch of people, and so there's different cultures inside the Catholic Church, and I happen to draw, you know, I drew the short straw in grade school. So
right,
but many of my friends loved the church experience, and good for them. I was happy to leave and be on my way.
Well, I had Richard Rohr on my show about a year or so ago, you know, and he's a Franciscan friar, and he's doing some wonderful things there in the Center for Action and Contemplation in Albuquerque, and because he sounds almost pure unity to us unitics, and he actually complimented us that we understood what he was talking about. Well, you know, the thing is, we've been talking about this for 100 years. You know, it may be a little new to more traditionalist Christians, but this non-dual path is something that comes naturally to us, right? And I always think that, you know, you could be really radical in a Pentecostal or Roman Catholic tradition, but in a Unity tradition, you know, nobody notices you because we all share the same, pretty much the same worldview in that regard. So how did you find Unity then, John?
There was a Unity Church. Unity of the Palm Beaches was located about halfway between my home and my law office in Palm Beach. And I drove past it virtually every day. And the sign said, Unity Center for Practical Christianity. And I said to myself many times, what in the world is practical Christianity? Is there anything practical about Christianity? I had defined myself as a not an atheist, but a certified agnostic.
Right.
And I make kind of jokes about that. What's practical about Christianity? But it was a curiosity. And my then wife and I, Julie, had been looking for a church. So we tried the Episcopalians, and because we just felt it wasn't a matter of belief. It was a matter of got to do something on Sunday morning, and we feel guilty if we're not in church, in some kind of a church. Yeah. That's how it was for us then. And we tried the Episcopalians for a while, and we tried. We went to a Science of Mind church in Fort Lauderdale, and that was really intriguing. And then I found myself, I developed a slight cocaine problem back in the 1981 or 82. And I say slight cocaine problem with some irony, because there isn't such a thing as a slight cocaine problem. It was all encompassing, and I got myself into a treatment center, thankfully, and began doing 12-step work. And my Julie said she was attending the Unity Church, and if I wanted to go with her when I got out, I could join her. And I thought, oh, okay, because they were telling me that I had to find a higher power, a connection to something greater than my own mind. And so when I got out, I began attending with her, and that's how I found Unity. Yeah. It was very comforting. Very, very comforting for me.
So many people say that Unity is almost like the 13th step. You know, we get a lot of people who attend the 12-step program in Unity churches. I know we did in my church, you know, and I think there's a resonance, there's a non-judgmental quality and an allowing you to have the God of your own understanding kind of thing, as opposed to a dogmatic God. And I think that resonates with 12-steppers. It's also a psychological program, isn't it? And Unity is sort of spiritual psychology. So I think it fits well together.
It's a nice fit. I know Hal Rosenkranz, who was one of the founders of the Association of Unity Churches and one of its first presidents, and the minister at Unity of the Palm Beach, has one time asked me, said, how is it that you 12-steppers comprehend this Unity truth so quickly? You get it so easily, as opposed to others who might never get it. I said, we get it because we have to. Our lives depend upon it. And so we're much more opened to it, I think. And I think it's very much of a natural fit for Unity and people in the 12-step programs.
Well, I think that's an excellent point you make, John, and that is, you know, it's so easy to put our spiritual path aside or play games with it, you know, and have it, like you said, as a nice thing on Sunday, and then we forget about it for the week. But when it becomes real, you know, when it's a matter of life and death, then we really start to progress on our path, I think. And, you know, if you are an addict, you know, an abuser or whatever, a substance abuser, you know, if I don't do something, I'm going to die here. So that really gets your attention. And I've always said that the greatest, hampering on the spiritual path is not sin, it's complacency, you know, that we're complacent about, oh, well, I could do it tomorrow, I'll put it off, etc. But, you know, once you realize, man, I've got no time to waste you, I've got to get going, then it becomes powerful, you know, then you see real change. And I encourage my congregation to, you know, whatever excites you, whatever really gets you, whatever fires you up, makes you feel this, you know, pursue that. You know, I guess it's similar to what Joseph Campbell talked about when he said, follow your bliss, right? You have to follow that which inspires you, because otherwise you're just not going to do it, you know. And sometimes the fear inspires us, you know, the fear, if I don't do this, you know, something worse going to befall me. So, you know, fear is not all bad in that regard, right? It can motivate us towards something larger.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you still actively involved in the program? Are you, you know, seeking your sobriety every day, or?
Oh, I haven't had a drink in 34 years. But what I'm focusing on now is a program called Adult Child or Adult Children of Alcoholics.
Uh-huh.
And it's really an amazingly deep program. And I'm focused on that. I go to one or two meetings a week and work that very deeply. It's many people in the 12-step fellowships find that after they've had a few years of in their own thing, whether it's Al-Anon or AA or NA or whatever, they find that, okay, the next step to really plunge deeper is to get into adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families. Which is an interesting look too, Paul. There are actually some conversation about changing the name to Adult Children of Dysfunctional Families, because that covers just about all of us. And there's such great principles and practices that we learn in ACA.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we're all wounded, aren't we?
Yeah. You talk about, we are. You talk about the complacency as being a big problem. I've seen that too. But I've also seen closed-mindedness, an unwillingness to learn or to check out something beyond what I already know.
Mm-hmm.
And to question. I love the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki, where the principle is, I let go of the past, let go of the future, and I'm here right now. What can I just about life and me in this particular instant, in this particular moment? And so I love the idea of having a beginner's mind and approaching a problem or an area with that beginner's mind.
Yes, wonderful. What a seminal book that was, wasn't it? And a great man, you know, he did so much to bring Zen to America, and that, I think that book is still a classic. And if our listeners haven't read it before, it's well worth reading. It's a lovely collection, I think, of talks that Sunryu Suzuki gave at the Zen Center in San Francisco back in the day, but elegant and very practical. Coming back to that word, practical. Interesting you mentioned that, you know, because that was what really attracted me, because I grew up in the Episcopalian or Church of England, and it never seemed relevant, really. It was ridiculous, actually. It was just, upper-class Englishman intoning words and that made no sense to me. So I was yearning for something that I could apply in my daily life. Of course, I went to India first, but I liked Unity because it married the insights I'd found in India with what I truly understood to be the teachings of Jesus. Because, you know, Jesus himself actually was a very practical man, wasn't he? We've got this overlay of piety and the religion about Jesus, but the actual religion or spirituality of Jesus is very powerful and very radical and very iconoclastic, actually. So he's almost like a Zen master himself, isn't he?
Well, I think he was. I think he was. I think he came here to do workshops. I have a radical view of Jesus. I had no religion for many years, and as you know, I did the EST training, and I was agnostic. Go ahead.
No, we'll talk about that in a minute. You know.
Okay.
Find out more about that.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. Yeah, and there's a connection with Jesus in that, and I'll remind me. But
okay. Well, no, that's fine. Continue on your thread.
I did the S training when I was an agnostic and had no belief whatever in anything outside of my own brain. I began doing that work and had two weekends and had amazing breakthroughs and became aware of a higher consciousness, became aware of the present moment as something to like to save her. I wasn't. You know, I was totally into my head and my story before that, and I came into the S training, and I began over the weeks that followed. I began to become aware of quotes that I heard remembered from Jesus: "Judge not, lest ye be judged." I said, "Oh, wow." That I became aware in a program called the Be Here Now just how deep that meant and how practical what Jesus's teachings were. That he was really, and I got this idea that he really came here to teach us how to live, and how to live happily, and how to live successfully. And there's so many of his quotes came up for me when I was back in those EST seminars. I said, oh, and I actually got the thought at one time, he was the first EST trainer. He was here to teach us about beingness and about living and being happy. It was a remarkable experience. I'm losing my voice too, Paul. I've got a bit of a bronchial thing going on too.
We understand. Yeah, take it easy there. There's a lot of it going around, unfortunately, this year, and we're all dealing with some variants of it.
I so seldom get ill. But I found myself the other night, I got a little too much sugar, and sometimes my resistance gets down when I do too much sugar, and bada bing, bada boom, here we are. And that's right. That's right. You got to watch your nutrition. Got to take care of the body temple.
We know many of us are familiar with EST, but for those who aren't, can you want to tell us just briefly what it was, of it was?
It was about it was founded by a man named Warren Earhart in San Francisco, and it was about, God, what can I tell you? It was about more than I've already said. It was about, for me, I discovered living in this holy instant. The Course in Miracles calls this the holy instant, but being in the now. As I was reading Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, some years ago, I went, oh, sure, I saw this in the S training. I get this. I understand this. I thoroughly understood it because I had take an EST. In fact, I thought that maybe Eckhart Tolle had done EST. It turns out I think he's not. But I was seeing the same things I had seen in the EST work. And then the Landmark Forum is followed that, which is also quite good. Very Eastern mystical. It draws roots from Zen. It's Warren may have been a Zen master. The trainers seemed, in retrospect to me now, to have been very heavily influenced by Zen, and that strain of Buddhism that calls people out, and says, look at your life, look what you're doing, look how you're thinking, here's what you're creating. And there was like 150, 200 people in a room, in this amazing group thing, and where you could really see how you created your own messes in your life by watching somebody else talk about theirs. Anybody who's been in group therapy has maybe seen that phenomenon. This was not group therapy, but it was something akin to it. And they had a certain agenda for discovering oneself. And many people from Buckminster Fuller to, John Denver and many other people took it and got amazing results out of it. And I'm the one that I'm the happiest about that because I got a lot out of it myself. I would never become a union. I would never become a union minister. I would never have had the whatever it takes to do that. So happy I did.
If you hadn't gone through those programs, yeah,
I think.
And we still have a lot of people. Yeah, we still have a lot of people today, of course, who in my own church went through the Landmark Forum and got a lot out of it. And worth pursuing for those that are attracted to that particular way. I remember going to EST training myself one time, and initially I was a little intimidated because I walked into the room and everybody starts spontaneously clapping and applauding you, because there's sort of that little bit groupthink going on to a degree, but it's intention is good. But for those who were more, I just come from Britain at the time. I was more reserved, and here I was with all these outgoing, you know, Americans all applauding and whatnot. I was like, "Whoa, wait a minute! I'm not sure I." You know. But because the intention was to, you know, part of the intention was to wake you up out of your conditioned, again, using that complacent self, you know, into a new way of looking, right? And sometimes, like boot camp, it has to break you down before it builds you up again. And I often, you know, see that the spiritual path and the military path are very similar in some regards because, you know, part of it is to break you down so that you can annihilate your ego, if you like, so that
there's
you can,
a lot of that. In Est especially, Landmark not so much, but Est especially. Hal Rosenkranz, who I mentioned, the aforementioned Hal Rosenkranz of Unity of the Palm Beaches, I invited him to come and to do an Est seminar, and he told me that Est, and this was really meaningful, he told me that it was part of it along with Unity and Science of Mind and Lifespring and others were part of the perennial philosophy as enunciated by Sinclair Lewis, or who was the one that wrote the book about the perennial philosophy?
Aldous Huxley.
Yes, Aldous Huxley, yes. Where I'm responsible for my whole life. I am one with the world, with the universe. And so I began to see that over time, that what Hal was saying was, it was right on, because much of the data that I was receiving from Unity was very similar to what I had seen in Est. Only the modality of how it is delivered is quite different. And for me, I was blessed by having both. Yeah, I was blessed by having both.
And this is the beauty of it, isn't it? That there's probably only one truth, one way, in a sense, but there's a million paths up the mountain, but we all get to the same point eventually, and you know, because there is this perennial philosophy of our inherent worth and oneness, which you know, shows up in many various forms. I love the idea that God is formless but takes many forms, and there's many paths perhaps, but they're all really the same. Ultimately, they reach the summit. Folks, I'm with John Considine. He's a Unity minister, and he's talking about his background, how he found Unity, and we'll find out more when we come back after the break. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity. Join us in a couple of minutes.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Be sure to grab the latest issue of Unity Magazine and read the interview with Ram Dass, the iconic spiritual leader of the 60s. He's now focused on how to age consciously. Spiritual author Thomas More reflects on grumpy old men and women. And Barbara Bowen writes a touching story about her experience as a caregiver to her mother with dementia. To subscribe to Unity Magazine, go to unity.org and click on Publications.
What if you could start each day with a positive outlook, remembering you are a divine expression of God? Daily Word is a booklet of daily devotionals offering positivity that's downright contagious. With a print subscription or by email, you can pause to reflect on how to practice spirituality in your human experience. Reading Daily Word takes about a minute a day, so you can feel uplifted every morning. Visit dailyword.com to subscribe.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or, if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with John Considine, Unity Minister, and we're talking about his spiritual path. We've already found out that he was born and brought up Roman Catholic. Didn't find that tremendously rewarding, but found other modalities helpful, including EST and the Langmuir Forum and the 12-step program. And all these things helped him find unity and the practical Christianity that appealed to you, right, John?
Yes.
I know you've been also influenced somewhat by yoga and meditation. Do you want to talk about that?
I have. In fact, I've been teaching mindfulness meditation for, oh gosh, I guess since the mid-80s. I love it. It's very powerful work for living one's life in awakeness and awareness, being open to a lot more possibilities in life, being open to more of one's power. And so I love to teach mindfulness meditation. And I teach it. Paul, I teach mindfulness now individually with people from around the country using the Messenger video chat. And I also teach it on a Friday night here at a local coffee shop. In Royal Oak, Michigan. Yeah, I get a nice little crew of people there, and we meditate together, and it's very rewarding stuff. So yeah, I had learned meditation initially in the EST training in 1980. They did not call it meditation. They called it a process. But it was meditation, basically. And then I studied meditation with people in the 12-step programs and with Hal Rosenkranz and other teachers in Unity churches. And, yeah, so I've been doing it for many years.
So you're talking about Vipassana, a mindfulness meditation, just in general? Yeah.
Well, meditation in general is great, and I do chanting meditations and creative visualization meditations, and Wayne Dyer in West Palm Beach, and Dr. Wayne Dyer taught the Japa manifestation meditation. I teach that as well. It's remarkably powerful work. For manifesting the things that you'd like to have in your life, but right now I find myself teaching more and more of mindfulness meditation because it's so good for stress relief and for health.
Right.
And in our 21st century America, people are running around like chickens with their head cut off to make enough money to live, and so mindfulness meditation helps us sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride more powerfully,
right.
with greater resources. I find. I remember I was in.
Well, I think.
In my career, for instance, I was actually in a courtroom one time, in a trial, and something happened. I won't go into details like I do in my class, but something happened that was totally stunning. I had not expected it. And like Daniel in the lion's den, the lions were roaring at me in my consciousness. Were saying, "How could you have done this? How could you have overlooked this? How could you not have prepared for this eventuality? Now you're going to lose the case." And because I had meditated that morning, I was able to pause, take three or four deep breaths, feel my body, feel my feet upon the floor, take the piece of paper that the judge had just read to me, and look at it. continue to breathe and do a mindfulness practice right there in the courtroom, Paul. And suddenly it leapt out from the page exactly the clause that got us out of trouble. And I quoted it to the judge, and the judge said, basically we won the case. Because I was free to just be there, and stop the insanity going on in my brain. Stop all the fears and the worries and the anxieties and the self-loathing and the self-criticism and the fear. And just take a breath and be there. And that mindfulness is amazingly powerful.
Well, I love what you're saying, too, because I think what's important with mindfulness is we're not trying to change something. We're not escaping into, a meditative time or go get me to a cave where there's no problems. We're in the middle of our problems, but we're bringing in something different. We're bringing in a resource, a presence that is available in that moment, right? Just being present to what is powerful, and we see that there's something greater always present, even in the most difficult of circumstances. And when we remember that, then there's the resource that comes to us that's peaceful, actually, that gives us amazing ability. So yeah, what a great example of that there. And again, practical spirituality, isn't it? It works in the. I love what Pema Chodron says. She was a great, wonderful articulator of mindfulness herself, and a Tibetan Buddhist, of course. She said, "Lean into the sharp points," and I love that phrase because
I love Pima Chodron.
So it's the same idea. We're not escaping, but we're being present to something larger than what we think is around us at any given time, And that is powerful stuff, because the presence is always larger than what we can imagine is going on. So there's always that larger resource of possibility. Great example. Yeah. So, okay, before we completely run out of time, we haven't even got to the fact you became a Unity minister. So how did you come? You mentioned earlier that, it was thanks to Landmark and 12 Steps that sort of got you in that direction. But, tell us about how you ended up at Unity School and became an actual ordained Unity minister.
Well, I was doing quite well in my trial practice. I did a lot of personal injury work and helping people and giving them insurance checks and helping them wade through the insurance morass that they needed help with. And I was doing quite well financially. But I felt there was something missing in my life. I had seen in the EST training that I really wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I really wanted to shift the consciousness of people from victims, where we see ourselves as victims, where we see ourselves as co-creators. What an amazing shift that was that I'd seen both in EST and then in Unity. I began to ask of the universe. I had no concept of what God might be or anything else, but I just began asking the powers that be, show me what can I do? How will I do this? How will I make this difference? And I kept practicing law, and one of the great things I enjoyed was teaching my clients how to meditate. Before we would go to court or to a hearing, I wanted them mindful. And so I would teach them meditation before we went to court. And so I enjoyed that a lot, but it was still something more I wanted to do, Paul. And one day I was sitting in church at Unity of the Palm Beaches, and Hal Rosenkranz was speaking, and it hit me like boom, right between the eyes. It wasn't a decision I made. It was like a lightning strike. You're going to be a Unity minister. That's your answer. And I sat back and went, it wasn't like yes or no. It was like, oh yes, of course I am. That's perfect. I can do that. And I knew at that point, and then I just had to clear up some things in life. And yeah, I went off to school and went to what is then known as the Ministerial Education Program in 1996. It was ordained in 1998. Uh-huh.
Wow.
That was. Did you ever see a movie called The Apostle, starring Robert Duvall?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Duvall was a fabulous actor, and he was about this Southern Baptist or evangelical minister, and he talks about his Holy Ghost moment. He had my Holy Ghost moment when the Holy Ghost touches me. And he does this. You can just imagine how he does it. He's a remarkable actor. And that's how it felt like that day for me. That I call that my, ironically, I call it my Holy Ghost moment, where I was really touched by something beyond me that said, boom, here you go. You're going to be a Unity minister. And so it wasn't truly a calling. I had never experienced what a calling might be. I thought that was just a phrase, a term of art, but no, it's really, really, really happened for me. It was really a calling. Yeah.
Well, I think, if you're foolish enough to become a minister, you really have to have a calling,
Well, true. Totally.
I'd be a little facetious there, but
Remember what James Lloyd Freeman used to tell admissions classes? He said, don't become a Unity minister unless there's nothing else you can do.
Exactly. That's what I was about to reference, that idea, because there's... Yeah. No, that's fine. You got there ahead of me. But that's so true, I think, in the sense that, it's the one most wonderful thing in the world to be a minister. But it's also one of the most... upsetting things, because people, when they're broken open, as they often are when they're coming to church, especially Unity Church, they can be very difficult, and so you can open yourself, unfortunately, to a lot of hurt, because people can hurt you. I don't know one Unity minister who hasn't received that, but then again, on the other side of it, you receive so many blessings from being present to people and people uplifting you and whatnot. I've just been through a retirement process at my church, and last week we had the last Sunday, and we had the party on Saturday, and it was just wonderful to receive all the blessings, and all the gratitude from people. You were there when, etc. And
yes,
and that's wonderful.
Paul.
Yeah, well, thank you. But, over the years I've also received, you are the devil incarnate, you're not walking your talk, et cetera, et cetera. And so often we project on others, especially our ministers, because we trust them. We trust them to see our, to see our dark side. And so we put that off on them. So I think it's testimony that we managed to persevere. So you've been in how many ministries since graduation?
Oh my goodness. I've spanned the globe. I've gone from California to Detroit in ministries. And I struggled with it. Much of the work I'm doing in adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families is about healing those parts of me that reacted hurtfully and woundedly to the attacks that you're talking about. Yeah, to the real people out there who I was called the fascinating. You mentioned that. The phrase was something like devil incarnate. Really? And how you're treated by we ministers can be pretty abused by people, and I've experienced that, and so much of the work so I actually came to a bottom, as we say, in the past couple years, and got myself into adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families, and doing a lot of work. It really triggered a lot of opportunity for growth for me, and I've been doing that work. Yeah, I really relate to what you're saying about that, and I congratulate you. Amazing that you've been able to. 30 years, and was it 30 years in the one church?
Yeah, in the one church.
Wow.
I know.
That's like a record.
Yeah,
gotta be close to a record.
It probably is, because I think a lot of ministers come to a ministry, that's either already successful or they build it into success, and then they stay for a long time. I know people like Howard Caesar, been in the church for many, many years. But it's very unusual to be in the one and only church, because usually, you learn all your mistakes, you make all your mistakes in the first few years, and move on, try to do better later. But, as it happened, I stayed in the one ministry. So there's no right way to do this stuff, but it is fairly unusual. You're right.
I had a come to Jesus talk with God maybe several months after my last ministry, my last church, and I And I said, "What? You gave me this. You gave me this job. You gave me this job to be a minister, to make a difference in the world, and to bring transformation to the planet. And you, all of these problems that, you know, and some wretched experiences that I hadn't counted on, and difficulties with church boards and all, and the message, the clear message I got back, Paul, in that conversation with God was, it was never about building a church. It was about transforming people's lives, including your own. I went, oh wow! That's what my intention was, and I saw that. I began to think of all the people who all the people who said thank you for being there for me. I received a nice email a few months ago from somebody in my first church in Des Plaines, Illinois. Who thanked me. She said, my wife and I, if you remember, we were headed for a divorce, and you intervened and you counseled us, and we're still together now. We're celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary. Thank you.
Oh, lovely.
Reverend John is, oh my goodness, brought me to tears. And other, many other people who I've been able to, who've been open to allowing me to work with them.
Absolutely.
So great. I'm so grateful for that one, those wonderful opportunities, and for being reminded of it.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, it sounds like you're in a better space than you were a little while ago then. So some healing is occurring, and that's wonderful. Oh, yeah. I know you're a big, you like the law of attraction, don't you? You've been teaching that also.
I do. Yeah. I find that the law of attraction, of course, I was first introduced to it through its kissing cousin, which Unity teaches is the law of mind action. And
right.
I found that the law of attraction, which is thoughts held in mind, as you know, thoughts held in mind produce after their kind, which is very similar to the law of attraction, if not identical. But I found that the teaching of Abraham Hicks, teaching a law of attraction, puts a fine point on it for me. I was looking at law of mind action or law of attraction as a general, big category stuff. Like, I'm not very prosperous. I want to be prosperous. I want to make a larger income so I can put my kids in college. And so I used the law of tithing and other prosperity. Did the 4T program. You're familiar with the 4T program?
Yes.
Yeah. Stretton Smith's program, which really, really helped me in my prosperity consciousness. In general terms, and what I added, the piece that Abraham Hicks has taught me is, okay, getting that big stuff, the new car, the job, the kids' college education, that's all well and good. But how about the next moment? How about today's happiness? How about being happy today? How about being satisfied and fulfilled in the next moment? And focusing on that rather than on the stuff, rather than on the goods, the, you know. And that's really been valuable for me, to live my life consciously and joyously, rather than to wait for the stuff to show up. I used to wait for the stuff to show up before I could get happy. And Abraham said, no, you get happy first, and the stuff will show up, you know.
Yeah, so true. Wonderful.
Well, Jesus said, why do you worry, you little faith? Your Father knows what you need and desire long before you even do. Well, that's the same what Abraham Hicks teaches. It's in different words. So I'm going on a bit of a rant about that. I apologize.
No, that's fine. It all boils down to focusing on the good rather than the goods, doesn't it? You know, just drop the S. And, the good is always available. Yeah, very good.
I like that. I like that very much.
We need to wrap up. So, John, if there's one thing in a couple of minutes you'd like to share with our listeners that's of pertinence right now in practical terms, what would it be? What would you say?
Can I tell people how to get a hold of me?
Yeah, please.
If they want to. Yeah, okay. You can email me at Coach John Considine, CoachJohn. Considine, CONSIDINE, @gmail.com. If I can be of any help to you or any service to you at all. If you have any questions, I'm happy to be there for you. I would say keep on keeping on would be what I would be keep putting one foot in front of the next, and realizing that, you know, you and I have been in the spiritual world for, what, 30, 40, 50 years, Paul, and what I've found is that there's always more room to grow. You know, enjoy your successes, enjoy your breakthroughs now, and know that there's more. Don't ever quit. Keep meditating, keep going to classes, and keep asking the heavens, God, source energy, keep asking, okay, what's next? Show me the way. That's what I would leave people with.
Yeah, that's good, because we want to remain teachable, right? Once you stop learning, then you stop living, and you're basically dead. That's my understanding, you know. It's like T.S. Eliot said, old men should be explorers, right? There's never too late to learn new things, and it keeps us alive, you know. And I know many people who have given up learning anything, and they just sit there in a sort of a dead place. And I know others who are constantly curious, you know, and they're much more fun to be around, actually. And I want to learn something new every day. I learned about the German timber frame road today, and I thought, oh, that's cool. And I thought, what's that? And I looked it up, and it's this road in Germany where you zigzag down from the north to the south of Germany and visit villages that all have these old timber framed houses. You know, there's an actual road now, sort of a tourist road, and I didn't know that until today. You know, and it was fun to learn that little bit of information. But that's sort of a silly example, perhaps. But it expands our. They say if you do Sudoku or crossword puzzles, you keep your brain active, right? I think it's the same. It's the same with everything. You know, you need to keep that spiritual muscle active, and just as we need to keep pumping a little iron to keep the bone structure doing good as we age. So it's the same thing.
I joined a choir recently. For the same purpose, to get my brain exercising. I've had a voice for a long time, but reading music with sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses is really a challenge for me. And so it's challenging the plasticity of my neurons in my brain. And like you say, you're doing the Sudoku. That's awesome stuff.
Another good example. Let me tell you about next week.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to John, because we're out of time, unfortunately. It's just zipped by. Next week, Unity Minister Reverend Ken Daigle joins me from San Francisco.
Oh, wonderful.
He's a fellow board member at the Unity World Headquarters, and a wonderful guy, a former dancer and choreographer from Broadway, and now a wonderful Unity minister. So he'll join us next week. But right now I want to say thank you, John Considine, for a wonderful show. Really enjoyed your presence with me this time round. So thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing Ken Daigle next week. He's awesome. I had him in L&O.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Give him my love.
There we go.
Give him my
All
love.
Right. I will do. Thanks for listening, folks, and have a good week. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Every moment we live can be holy, and all we need to do to experience that state is to make the decision to do so. Everything we do can be a prayer, and by using our innate creativity with intention, in every aspect of our lives, that can indeed be true. Author Carla Kincannon wrote, "Creativity is so much more than art making. It is a tool for navigating through everyday experiences to find the sacred in each God-given moment." Discover Creative Spirit, Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Central Time, and experience the joy of connecting to spirit through creative expression.
In an old Three Stooges comedy skit, Larry would call out to Mo, "I can't see, I can't see." Mo would immediately rush to Larry's aid, asking, "Why not?" Larry would then smile and say, "Because I've got my eyes closed." Then, of course, Mo would bop Larry on the head. It is a good idea to pause occasionally to think about what we may not be seeing because our eyes are closed. And preferably do this before we get bopped on the head by circumstances. Is it life that is restraining us, or our own limited thinking? When we truly understand that no one can make us think or feel anything unless we give them permission, we begin to see the vastness of our freedom. Open your eyes. Recognize your power to choose how you will focus your thought. Celebrate your freedom. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.